Today's episode of House of Strauss is brought to you by Remarkably Remote, a new daily microcast from GoToMeeting, all about making work from home work for you, with indispensable intel on how to stay sane, motivated, and productive at home. We're here to help you in this brave new remote working world. Add to your flash briefing on Alexa or subscribe on your favorite podcasting app.
Stars hang with stars. Winners hang with winners.
Welcome to the House of Strauss on the Athletic Podcast Network.
I have no idea if that was bad or good, but I
that was great.
I had fun.
I enjoyed that. I was working and I was listening. It was fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah, typical Ethan. Typical Ethan.
What I do.
Doubting the greatness of my work.
Yeah. Well, it's more me doubting the greatness. It's more me doubting the greatness of my work.
I know. That's the joke.
I'm in the fucking zone. They're pissed off. I'm in the zone.
Billy, this is not about black and white. This is about money. This is about green. You got that? Look, man, I need this $5,000. And I am not about to let you blow this for me. No fucking way. You pissed off? See, that's what you want me to do so you can get me in this fucking zone you're talking about. But it ain't gonna happen because you ain't good enough.
Oh, is that another brother thing, huh?
No,
you fucking racist?
No, there's certain things you can do and there's certain things you can't.
I can hear Jimmy.
No.
I can hear Jimmy.
No.
Yes, I can.
You can't hear
fuck
Jimmy.
Fuck you.
No, you can't
yeah,
hear
fuck
Jimmy.
You.
Good, fuck me.
Yeah, fuck
good,
you.
Good, fuck me.
Fuck
now
you,
say with this.
Fuck you.
Yes, fuck me. Fuck me. Fuck me.
See you.
Welcome to House of Strauss, something that I'm going to call Film Zone, because it's quarantine and we don't always have these moments to explore the culture around sports and movies and everything else. And you know what? I'm lying. Zach Harper and I just wanted an excuse to talk about White Man Can't Jump, and we brought Marcus in. That's really there's no fancy intro for this, people. No fancy intro at all.
Film Zone.
I can hear Jimmy.
White Men Can't Jump. With Ethan Strauss, Zach Harper, and Marcus Thompson.
I can hear Jimmy.
Film Zone.
Okay, so I initiated this conversation with you, Zach.
Yes.
You know, what is a movie that we should look over and talk about in detail? And you came back at me with this one, and I think it's an interesting choice, and I'm glad that you did. But I want to know why you did. Why White Men Can't Jump?
Well, it's my favorite basketball movie of all time. I know No Dunks just did a podcast about it, and I think everyone should do a podcast about it, because there's a lot of great conversations to be had about this movie. It's the best basketball movie of all time if we're not counting Hoop Dreams as a documentary, right? If we're keeping that as a separate, artistic, documentary genre, then this is the best one of all time.
Wow.
And on top of that, it's a great example of one of my favorite things that, our group often gets to discuss, no matter who's in it, is Two Americas. There's a very real Two Americas look at this movie. And so I thought, not only should you and I do this, but we needed Marcus Thompson. We needed to hit the appearance fee to get Marcus
so
in the
I'm
door.
I'm a token. I'm a token for that guy.
It's tough. We have to hit the appearance fee. We have a budget here, Marcus, and so we have to hit your appearance fee to get you to just get in the door, and then we get to have your wisdom and your perspective on this movie and this culture.
I feel like a token. That's all I'm saying. I feel like we needed somebody black.
Well, it's because Marcus. It's because you were big in the pickup basketball gambling scene.
Everyone knows he ran a very tight ship on pickup basketball gambling.
By the way, to believe the early to mid '90s, everybody was just gambling on amateur sports all the time, and it was a big thing, and everybody was hustling each other. That's what was going on in this movie, in Kingpin, which Woody Harrelson is also in.
Yes.
Tried to hustle people. There are pool sharks. We all remember Uncle Phil and Fresh Prince of Bel Air. This is all anybody was doing in the early to mid '90s. Was hustling sports. It was a big. I think it was 10% of our economy in 1993. Just off the top of my head.
I agree. I think, and I think we should gamble on everything, especially nowadays. There are no rules anymore, right?
Well, okay, so I think
full confession. Mm-hmm. When we were playing hoop on the playgrounds, there was gambling on the sides, but it wasn't on the games. It was like they were either shooting dice or there was like a dog fight happening. So nobody ever gambled on us per se, but the gambling was nearby, yeah, in my hood anyway.
It seems for like some reason, I'm picturing gambling on a person fighting a dog. That'd be like, I wonder if he could take this Rottweiler.
That'd be an incredible. I mean, I wouldn't actually want to see it, but you know, if it was Groundhog Day, to quote another 1990s or mid 1990s movie, and the dog and the human are going to be okay the next day, then I definitely would want to see it. I mean, I would definitely want to see that and put some money down.
The Black Tux believes every groom deserves a better experience when it comes to finding formal wear, a suit, or a tuxedo for the big day. Did you know the Black Tux was actually started by two guys who had one of the worst tuxedo fittings you could imagine? It turns out they aren't alone in this frustration. Just listen to these one-star reviews from competitor tux shops that shall not be named. Go elsewhere. This place is pretty terrible unless you're dressing like your grandpa or Halloween. We felt weird buying a suit from somebody so unhappy. We were afraid his bad vibes might follow us to our wedding, so we left. What I love about the Black Tux is that they have an easy online ordering process that brings you your suit or tuxedo straight to you. Just pick a style at theblacktux.com and request a free home try-on so you can feel the fit and quality before you commit. And if online isn't your style, the Black Tux has showrooms all over the country where you can find your fit and plan your look. From there, they'll ship your order 2 weeks before your wedding so you can check it out one last time. Talk about commitment. Whether you're buying your outfit or looking to rent, you won't find a formal wear experience or designs like the ones you'll find at the Black Tux. If you want your wedding to be remembered for the right reasons, order your suit or tuxedo at theblacktux.com and enjoy 10% off with the code Strauss. That's Strauss. That's theblacktux.com, code Strauss for 10% off your purchase. The Black Tux, formal wear for the moment.
Look, okay, so I disagree with you off the bat. I wouldn't say it's the greatest
me
basketball.
Me too. I didn't want to say nothing.
What's a better basketball movie?
I prefer He Got Game.
That's easily my favorite movie, no, Game, without question.
Yeah. The ending's so bad.
I actually like the poetic surrealism of the ending. But anyway.
Man, Spike Lee was in his bag for that ending, Zach.
It's a great movie.
On this one, you can't hear Jimmy. On this one, you just can't hear Jimmy.
Already with the references.
It's a great movie, but you gotta punch that thing home. Mm. And he lays it up off the glass, and it doesn't even go in like that. Like the ending's just weak.
Well, I think here's,
let me know when you're ready to do He Got Game, because I'm on that one too.
I might want to do that one. And I
can
think,
I be the token on that one?
I think what puts that one over the top maybe is the basketball scenes are better. The basketball scenes are better.
Yeah, for sure.
And it just completely classic versus, I mean, I'm very entertained by the basketball scenes in White Men Can't Jump where everybody is taking a no look reverse layup. I mean, that's half the bucket.
I wasn't. I don't know. I watched this and I was like,
no, but that was the time. No, that was the time. No, it's just because Wesley Snipes can't play ball. That's the only part.
I kind of think he got a bad rap. He didn't look so bad.
I want to know how many takes that it took in the shooting scene, right? The first time scene.
He was pretty bad, though. He was. They had to work with him a lot. He was a natural athlete, but they still had to work with him. He's not a hooper, and this was a hoop movie. So I remember reading something about Shelton saying they fooled a lot of people by making Sidney Dean look like he could play.
They should have just gotten Denzel who could play.
Well, they tried. They tried to get Denzel.
He was doing Malcolm X at the time, so he was like, "I'm not doing this." The crazy part about this movie, I don't think many people know, is it was supposed to be Keanu Reeves, but he was so bad at basketball that Woody Harrelson got the part.
Yeah,
Keanu Reeves was who they wanted.
Wow.
They tried Charlie Sheen as well, but he doesn't like basketball.
Did they? I didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
He said like with baseball, he has a connection to baseball. He has no connection to basketball.
Yeah, it would have been a much worse movie. Woody Harrelson's a better actor than both of those guys. And I think
– Whoa. You just going to let that ride, Zach?
I mean, it's true.
Woody Harrelson's a better actor than Keanu Reeves?
You going to let him talk about John Wick like that?
I mean, what are we talking about when we say acting?
anyway, White Men Can't Jump is – it's interesting – because it's endured as something of a classic, but not necessarily the kind that's critically acclaimed or that people watch over and over. I mean, I'm sure you've watched it over and over, Zach.
I've seen it, but it's not
like a Shawshank Redemption, right? It's not.
It's the Shawshank Redemption of basketball movies,
and it has a lot of similar aesthetics to Do the Right Thing, which came out a few years earlier, but obviously set in New York and with Rosie Perez as well. But you know, it's not critically acclaimed like that, and it hasn't. In that way, it hasn't stood the test of time among critics, but yet it is a cult classic. It is referenced. Nike came out with a Billy Hoyle shoe a few years ago, for instance. There's a lot of affection for this movie. And so it's hard to sort out, okay, what was it? What was it that people liked about it? What was it that maybe prevented it from ascending to that higher plane of critical acclaim?
I'll tell you what they liked about it is that the white guy could keep up with the black guy in basketball.
Okay, so
this was like textbook, like cultural appropriation. Like this is like Billy Hoyle was so fascinated.
I agree.
With black culture,
it's messed up that Nike
so bad.
Yeah,
the whole thing was just Billy Hoyle wanted to be black. I mean, that's basically what it boils down to.
Well, a perfect example of that is when they go to the apartment to get the money back. And there's a point where they're about to fight, right? Like, you know, guy pulls a gun and everything. They're fighting, and then the other guy's like, "Oh, look at the game!" And so there's a shot by James Worthy, and one of the guys says, "See, that's a black man doing that." And Billy smiles. Billy's like, "Yeah, that is." Like, you're right. Like, there's a bit of like
there's a
sweltering of him saying like,
"Does Billy hate himself?"
I didn't remember this scene. Oh, totally.
Oh, yeah. Billy hates himself.
So now we're getting in the meat of it because he makes insane decisions with gambling. Just ludicrous.
Before all that even happened, before you get into it,
yeah.
And I forgot about this when I watched it. It was cheesy back then. The opening scene where he starts at the barbershop triplet and act like he's vibing with the gospel music. Yes. Talking about my dad's a preacher. I was like, first off, who approved this? And secondly, like, this dude... What is he doing? Like,
he's letting you know he's one of the good ones.
Yeah, he's from New Orleans.
I mean, I've got a lot of questions about what he's doing. I've got a lot of questions about 9 to 5. Like, why no real job? You know, what's the deal with you're just going to gamble and hustle basketball for a living? This seems like a crazy idea for a grown adult.
On the run.
He's on the run from the Stooges. These kindly mobsters.
This was so bad. The Stookie brothers are from Louisiana, and at the end, they're like, "Oh, now we can show our face again." So, in order to get $5,000, they've been traveling across the land chasing these dudes. Like,
makes no
come
sense.
On, they lost $20,000.
If they don't get that money back, then people think they can just not pay up.
Everybody in this movie has a tremendous amount of time on their hands somehow, whether it's the Stooges.
Well, Los Angeles, baby. Like, that's what we do here. We just got time.
The Stooges just have all the time in the world to travel cross country and stalk broke Billy Hoyle.
Why they couldn't just say at the beginning, "Look, dude, just lay down, put some ketchup on your mouth and make it look like if he kills you, we call it square."
We
gonna go back. Like,
he paid up.
There's such
kind. The news was riding down in a broke down van. Like they weren't living. They were barely making.
Well, because they didn't have that money yet. You got to fix up the van, Marcus. Like, come on.
So
broke, don't break it. Like,
I think we're skipping ahead a little bit. We're skipping ahead a little bit. Maybe we should get into the plot somewhat for those who don't know. So, it opens, as you say, with Billy Hoyle coming to. I believe the Venice Beach courts.
It's Venice Beach.
Venice Beach, which is something of a pickup basketball mecca, and Billy Hoyle seems quite enamored to be there. And quite quickly, we are introduced to him meeting Wesley Snipes' character, who's kind of the king of that court, and kind of showing. What was that?
Sidney Dean.
Sidney Dean with his bicycling hat. Is the king of that court, bicycling hat, and his very low cut tank top. Nobody's tank top fits in this movie, by the way.
There's far too many biker shorts for this to be a basketball movie. Like, way too many biker shorts.
That was the times back then.
No, it wasn't. Nobody was wearing biker shorts playing hoop. Like,
were you in Venice?
No. Actually, I was. I did play hoop there a couple of times. Nobody had on biker shorts.
Sidney Dean and Rosie Perez both wearing tank tops that just were not fitting intentionally.
I have no problem with Rosie Perez. That was fine by me.
So he shows up, Sidney Dean, and I have to say, as we get into the racial dynamics of this movie, there is this irony where it's just like mind-blowing to anybody there that a white guy can play basketball, which it seems a little much. I looked it up. The irony is that this might be the peak of white American basketball players doing well. It's only gotten worse since then, like dramatically worse.
But no, not Kevin Love stopped Steph Curry. Like, we can come on now.
I think the difference was on the street ball. Like, at that time, street ball was still like the place where white people allegedly couldn't play. Mm. Even like Larry Bird was legendary because he was telling people, you better put your black player on me, right?
Right. Yeah. But
it wasn't common to see a white dude out there balling on blacktop.
It might not be common, but if you go to Mosswood and white guy shows up and first few possessions.
White guys weren't showing up at Mosswood in the 90s.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. It's a very different happening. It's a very different Mosswood these days. Yeah, I mean, I get that. I'm just noting the irony of I looked it up in the 91-92 season. There was a white American player on every one of the three All-NBA teams. And that was – I just feel like that's never even going to happen again or come close to happening again.
I don't think we're going to have three white American players.
Yeah. It's like that is a bygone era. So yeah. There's some sort of irony there where in a time where there are white American superstars in the NBA and they are a presence in the NBA, this movie kind of hinges on the idea of like white guy playing basketball?
But what? This is the thing, like Marcus doesn't understand what this life is like to be the only white guy showing up to a park to play basketball. You don't understand that plight.
I don't, man.
I've felt that plight before.
I wonder if it feels like me walking into math class. I wonder if it's the same.
I mean, that would be weird if you as a middle-aged man just walked into a math class.
I'm just saying, like when I was walking into
walk into a Berkeley High math class right now.
They're like, what? A black guy? Why is he in here?
A black guy who's like 20?
I remember feeling a certain kind of way when I took calculus in high school and I walked in and everybody's like, you looking for the courts?
There are similar scenes happening in Little Fires Everywhere on I think it's Hulu right now, which that show's off to a good start. But yeah, I'm just there is an irony to this movie presumes that white American players just nobody thinks they can play at all. And the sad fact from white America's perspective is they never had it better. It's only gotten a million times worse.
I think you're missing a point on that. I think
there's a peak.
Even if they could play, they weren't going to where Billy Ho was going. Like just wasn't happening. Right. And how long was this after the Rodney King riot?
This might have been before that. I think it was filmed before, right?
Yeah.
When was this filmed?
I think it was
filmed. When it was happening, like when the movie came out and people was playing pickup, you just didn't see it. But I think it underscores how much of a gangster like Billy Hoyle was. Like he was about that hoop life. You can say what you want about him. He was about that hoop life in a way that you just don't see from people. Like he was like, yeah, let's go. Crenshaw, watch. It don't matter. I'm trying to play. That was his Madison Square Garden.
I think the culture of pickup basketball isn't what it was back then either. I think pickup has been overtaken in a way because now a lot of the pros have a background playing in indoor gyms and a lot of them grow up with more means. A lot of them have dads who played in the league. Obviously the Warriors are an example of that. And the idea that people have to cut their teeth on the blacktop just seems like it's less a part of the culture than it was back then. It's just a different moment in time.
You can't play black. You can't play blacktop now, right? If you're a star,
load management.
If you got NBA future. If you got an NBA future, you ain't playing blacktop. Not now. You just risking blowing out your knee.
Yeah, and also it's a great time capsule. I think the fashion. Okay, so one of the reasons why I think this movie has endured, even though Marcus and I both have more problems with it than you do, Zach, it's got an aesthetic. The aesthetic of it just smacks you in the face. It feels a little bit like a Spike Lee movie of that time, but it's LA and it's louder and it's a time and place in America where everybody decided that they were going to dress like the people in Miami dress. I don't know why, but that was the that was just how it was, and it seemed all the more so in Los Angeles in the movie. And it seems like it's really great set design, great costume design. I'm trying to remember the woman they hired to do it because she's done a good job on a few different movies. But I think that's one of the reasons it sticks. There are other reasons too, but I think that's one of the main ones. It's just visually the movie is very memorable compared to other movies of that time.
I think it's hats. Ah. I think that's what does it. I think it's playing basketball with hats. That's not a thing.
It's not.
Especially like the painter's cap.
Yeah, right. Tournaments canceled, league suspended, no live games on TV. It feels like it's been years, even though it's been like 2 weeks, basically. There's no better reminder of how important sports are to our lives than when they're taken away completely. But The Athletic, home to 400 of the best sports writers out there in these very strange, very uncertain times, still hard at work doing excellent reporting and telling unique, engaging, informative stories. Like the one about how minor league baseball players are getting financial support from their big league counterparts. You've got style rankings. You've got awards rankings. What else we got? We've got Ethan Strauss breaking down the problems with the draft. You've got incredible stories from Marcus Thompson. All of the above. It's during times like these, The Athletic can keep you connected to the teams, the athletes, the sports you love. Sign up today for a 90-day free trial to go see for yourself. You can see the creativity, the reporting, the storytelling that sets The Athletic apart. Just go to theathletic.com/House of Strauss for your 90-day free trial. Games aren't being played right now, but the stories are going to keep going. The stories don't go away. So go to theathletic.com/House of Strauss. We hope to see you there, and we hope to see you subscribe.
This movie was made by somebody who's never played pickup hoop in the hood, clearly.
Well, the movie, they said the director, Blake Shelton, was obsessed with it and went all over and was just obsessed.
Ron Shelton.
Oh, Blake, I made the...
What was the other movie Ron Shelton did?
Blake Shelton's like the singing judge, yes? I switched the
right, right, yeah. Ron Shelton also did Bill... He wrote Bull Durham.
Yeah.
This was like a movie that was done by a dude who did Bull Durham, right? Like,
he wrote Blue Chips,
Tin Cup.
Exactly.
A lot of gambling. This man loved sports gambling.
He loves some money exchange. Tin Cup's arguably the greatest sports movie.
Tin Cup is incredible.
So the costume designer, because I want to give her credit, Francine Jameson Tanchuk. And I think she did a great job encapsulating and distilling a certain 1990s style. And it's memorable, even if it's ridiculous that they would be playing in those hats. But in theory, Shelton did his research. I just don't know if I believe all of the research necessarily. But the movie is an aesthetic triumph, certainly. And it was a hit. It was a hit. And for whatever reason, it seems like the movies of that era that were majority black cast, like there's a lot of like declarations. Like it's a very, the title of the movie is really striking in a way and almost controversial. Sure. It's like a racial theory in the title. And that might've also added to the popularity, I think. Just
let me tell you.
Yeah.
This Francine had a year in 1992.
Oh, let's hear it.
She did White Men Can't Jump, Boomerang, and The Distinguished Gentleman.
Oh,
Those are three good movies.
That's a run right there.
Yeah, she's working with the top black actors, man. Eddie Murphy, Wesley Snipes at the time.
She did a bunch of Denzel movies. Just one Denzel movie. She did Courage Under Fire.
Would this have been better if Denzel did Sidney Green?
Yes. Yeah. One, he's a better actor, and two, he's a better hooper.
Is she responsible for the mushroom belt?
She might be.
I think John Witherspoon was responsible for making it memorable.
I would love to know if it was her idea. I kind of want the backstory on that one.
But before we advance into the movie, when I was watching it again, I was curious, Zach's thoughts on the run of Yo Mama jokes at the beginning. Were those funny in the 90s? Because I don't think I laughed one time watching
it. No, those were funny in the 90s.
We had no internet.
So apparently there's a story of how when they went to do that scene, when they went to film it the next day, Ron Shelton had said, we need your mama jokes. And so like guys went out and bought books. They wrote them down. They came back and they had too many that were NC-17 rated jokes. And he was like, I had to keep it to R even though I had 100 motherfuckers in this movie. Like he had to keep it. So I think they cut a lot of the great ones out.
You really can't take those jokes personally. I mean, they're not actually talking about your mama, you know?
This might be a Two America situation.
It might be a Two America situation. It might be. I mean, that's another thing I'm thinking too. It's like those jokes might have been funny in the 90s. I also think as like white kids growing up in suburbia, based on the movies, you would just assume that like most black people lived in Los Angeles, just based on the run of movies in the 90s. Just a majority. A solid majority.
Yeah.
7 in 10.
This movie was crazy irritating for the first like 30 minutes. Like
what?
Like the opening scene where him like trying to vibe with the barbershop. Okay. And then the your mama jokes are trash. But the most irritating part was how they never finished the game. Like nobody they're just walking off the court in the middle. You get a bucket and he's walking off and going to talk to this girl. And then all of a sudden they're playing a game and then they stop and now there's this kind of like who does that? You finish the game. You don't stop in the middle of the game.
It did capture the realism of the guy who brings his girl to watch him play pickup because that is a real guy. That guy does exist. That's a real thing.
I was that guy.
You were that guy?
Wow. Yeah, Don was with me. I was that guy.
Did you see what I did? Like, not really.
No, I knew she wasn't paying attention. She had a magazine out, but she was just with me.
The movie has a lot of loose ends it doesn't connect.
I'm having a bunch of things come to me perfectly.
I'm remembering that Wesley Snipes sees early on, and by the way, I don't know whether to go with Sidney Dean or Wesley Snipes. They are the actors to me, so I'll just say Wesley Snipes early on, notices that Rosie Perez is a weakness of Woody Harrelson's character, but that's never really used by him. It seems like that's Chekhov's gun that doesn't get used later. And it just seems like the plot is a little haphazard. It seems like a lot of the dialogue, like the emotions that people are rifling through do not make sense, where they're just lurching back and forth between anger and friendliness in ways that do not seem human or earned. And I think the movie in many ways just survives by the awesome cast that Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes are both great. It kind of just, I think, keeps this afloat and keeps it as a good movie.
I've never been more offended in my life. This is just absurd. Yo mama. This is just absurd. No, what are you talking about? He notices that Gloria is a weakness, and that is how he lets him know, I can get in your head. Right? No one can get in Billy Hoyle's head. Nobody. But Sidney realized, I can, right, and that keeps him in check. You're like, oh, I know I can do it. That's what this whole thing is about, being in your head and getting out of your head. And the fact that these guys are so, all over the place emotionally. Welcome to life, Ethan. And that's life on the hustle.
Welcome to life.
Yeah, that's life on the hustle, when you try to make 60 bucks in a day off the courts just so you can, give some money back to the Stuckey brothers. Like, that's life.
Mr. La Jolla wouldn't know about that. But
grew up in San Diego. You didn't grow up in the hard scrabble Sacramento, East Sacramento streets.
Mr. La Jolla was quite shocked when that dude is waving a knife around and everybody's very calm about it. And, that was very surprising to me. He's like poking at Billy Hoyle. And he's like, oh, whoa. Like, no. To quote Al Pacino as Jimmy Hoffa in The Irishman, when it's a knife, you run.
That's
Ethan, I think you missed what happened after that. I know Gloria's your weakness. Like right after that is when they hustled him.
Yeah.
Wait.
So he found the weakness. He found like, oh, okay, you're not as unflappable. And then him and his boy set him up. And that's when Gloria came over to get the money back.
Yeah, but she seemed to be more of a strength in that situation than a weakness. Okay,
no,
so
but I think that was the moment where he realized, we can take this dude. Like, he won't.
Okay, so here's a central question to me. The thing I most remember about this movie, having seen it as a kid, that stuck with me, and I think it's also a reason why it's endured despite whatever flaws it may or may not have, is the betrayal that happens in it. And Wesley Snipes betraying Woody Harrelson. And how do you guys feel about that? Because I remember as a kid just being shocked by it. I didn't know you could do that. Like, the idea of throwing a game was just crazy to me. The idea of betraying your teammate like that seemed insane to me. And there is a powerful argument that, hey, it's just all in the hustle. That's life. It's a hard life out there. Billy Hoyle should have known better. Or that's a legitimate transgression. Anybody who does that is a terrible person. Where do you guys come down on the central betrayal of Wesley Snipes' character betraying Woody Harrelson's character?
Marcus, he explains it in the apartment. In life, you either smoke or you get smoked. You got smoked.
I think Billy Hoyle got off good.
I think he's lucky he got out of there alive.
Exactly. He lucky that's all they did was take his money, because you don't go 15 times to the hood if you're Billy Hoyle and not get stolen at least once. He should have gotten
his ass beat multiple times. Being good at basketball would not have been like, you know what, that guy's okay. He would have gotten hammered.
The other scene that was memorable to me was Wesley Snipes just pulling dollar bills out of every part of every piece of clothing.
And he pulls it out of his crotch.
Yeah, and that's, again, clearly nobody who plays basketball is writing this scene.
But here's the part where it's like, Billy Hoyle was such an idiot, which,
yes,
Woody Harrelson is great because I couldn't stand him because Billy Hoyle was an idiot, right? So Woody Harrelson did an incredible job because I felt every dumb decision he made.
Yes.
It was all his money. Like, that's when you know you're getting hustled. The 1700 Wesley Snipes put up, all of it was Billy Hoyle's. He's like, you got my $1,700. I'm like, wait, Wesley Snipes didn't put up no money? Like, he's trying to buy a house.
Like, can't be very responsible.
Yeah,
that's where Billy Hoyle should have known he was getting hustled. Like, oh, you put up all your money, then we gonna go win it. Yeah, come on, man. Somebody who wanted to be black, he sure had no street sense.
He had terrible street sense. The decisions, and I know the movie knows that they're bad decisions, but they were so bad that it just make them a little more believably bad, right?
He's an addict.
He's an addict. He cannot help but gamble on the basketball games he's playing. Yeah.
Yeah.
No question.
But you would see that represented elsewhere.
You would attack his addictive nature. I mean, you're attacking mental illness.
So do we think that he hates himself and that's why he's self-sabotaging this way?
Yes.
That's what's going on. That's what the movie thinks is happening. And it's because he wants to be black. Like, that's why.
Because he wants to be black and he has no – he doesn't have a direction in life other than basketball. But he's not good enough to be a pro.
And how do we feel about the arc of his relationship with Rosie Perez? And I don't know what to make of this movie. I guess this is the challenge I'm coming to Zach with, because – we invest the time and energy into watching this and watching their relationship and watching him reconcile with her, only to eventually lose her in the end, spoiler alert. And then there's just
Or does he?
And then there's just happy music at the end. What did we learn? What did we learn? You know, the quote, burn after reading, final scene, what did we learn?
Wesley Snipes says it in that final scene too. You got to listen to the woman.
I think, you know? Okay, that's a pretty good rejoinder. You know, these movies,
that's something that he wasn't doing early, right? No. She says, I'm thirsty. And he's like, oh, I'll get you a cup of water. She says, no, I want you to understand, right? She wants the empathy of it. She wants him to sympathize. Like, she wants that feeling to be felt, not just all right, go solve my problem for me. She wants him to listen to her, right? And he wasn't doing that. And, you know, he's listening to music, but he can't hear it. He's hearing the one, but he can't listen to her, right? Like, there's a disconnect in his communication. And at the end, Wesley Snipes is saying, look, there are consequences for your actions, and now it's cost your woman. You got to listen to her if you want her.
I think that's a good observation. And it's funny, I was talking about 500 Days of Summer on Twitter, and I would never have thought that those two movies had parallels, but on that note, they do. Sorry, Marcus, you were saying.
It was the point at the end where, you know, he's got to do this favor for Sydney and he really wants to do it himself, but like he's taking the money and he's going to gamble with it. And it's crazy. I don't know. I'm presuming that he didn't tell her that he was the hookup for the Jeopardy.
A lot of that's unexplained. Yeah. So those who don't know.
She said when she was in the bed, she was like, "You didn't think Jeopardy was going to call, would you?" And he was like, "No, I didn't," right? And he didn't say,
"By the way, they didn't
call, I set that up."
What relationship is this? If I do the dishes, if I do the dishes in my house, I try to make it known that I'm doing the dishes, right? Like, I'm doing the dishes. Oh, you see the dishes? I did the dishes. You see those really clean dishes? Like, it's good on both ends. I get some credit, and it's also a reminder to my wife that I'm helping out. Why would he hide this? What would
because
the
he wanted her to feel like she made the accomplishment. This was her dream.
The accomplishment is winning Jeopardy.
But here's the part that it made me think about it too, right? Like, all he had to do was tell her.
Yes.
If he tells her at the end, he doesn't lose. Like, hey, look. I know what we said, but let me tell you, the reason you got on Jeopardy is because this guy hooked us up. So we owe it to him to pay him back.
I don't think she would.
Nah,
she's been putting up with this. She's been putting up with this stuff for too long, Marcus.
But like, look, this dude, like, he's like, yo, we're gonna guarantee the money.
Can we talk about how weak the favor?
Now you're gonna diminish her accomplishment.
Can we talk about how
we're gonna say, look, we got Plug and we got to get Plug back. This is who we gotta be.
But here's
how it is.
Can we talk about how weak the favor Wesley Snipes did was? That it, really, you're not indebted to this guy. He set up a situation where the guy can get. By the way, I don't understand how.
And by the way, like, how did her getting on the lot mean she's on the show? By the
it's
way,
like Alex Trebek is such a nice Canadian that
all of a sudden we're all Jeopardy experts, huh? We all know how that show works.
You know what it was? It was the dress. He's like, if I get on this dress, he gonna put me on.
Yeah, Alex Trebek just sees her on the lot and like.
Can I just say for the record, Rosie Perez was the best part of the movie.
She's the most memorable. She's one of the most memorable aspects of the movie. I'll say that.
There's a difference between hearing and listening. See, white people, y'all can't hear Jimmy. You listen.
What the fuck are you talking about? His drummer was white.
Get the fuck out of here. Jimi Hendrix's drummer was not white.
Yes, he did. Yo, check it out. See?
This is a picture.
Whole damn band is white except for Jimmy.
This is a fucking picture, man.
I couldn't, I was thinking, does she?
I can't acknowledge her.
Well, it's like I was thinking, does she elevate the movie, or is she just so she's just so much energy that it almost
she made
else.
It. No, she like all of the real, like thoughtful, like thought provoking storylines are centered around her, and also she makes it not a black and white movie. Like she makes it. And I'm not saying diverse because she's Puerto Rican. It's a black and white thing, but she just adds to the all of this is layers. All of this is gray area, right? All of this is dialogue that isn't so black and white. And she kind of does that. She's like this spicy Puerto Rican woman in the middle of it all. And all of like the connected themes, they're all relevant to her. Like even a part that was awkward to watch was, man, he was so disrespectful to her.
Did he want to be with her? Did he want to be with her in the end?
He was just like, shut up, spit that gum out. I'm like, yo, you ain't got no money.
He's
what are you talking about?
He's a hothead. He's a hothead, man.
It would have made sense if he was ex-military. They should have put in that Billy Hoyle was ex-military, I feel.
Oh, like, now he's got to have some PTSD.
The water in her face in the bed. I was like, yo, he wild for somebody who ain't got no job.
He was getting a little violent, too. Like Jeopardy when he was trying to get into the door there. That was, he definitely has some anger issues. But
he's a human.
You know, you're selling me on this. I do think she made the movie. I do think in many ways she made the movie. And I do think, again, that this was a case of the actors and the aesthetics carrying it. I will not give in to Zach. I do think the betrayal in the middle gave it something very interesting. And then there are memorable scenes. There are memorable lines. There are memorable lines. In a weird way, though, I think the most memorable line to me, or one of my favorites, is Tyra Farrell, ain't no vista, ain't no views, and they're sure as hell
and
ain't no vista.
Ain't no vista, no views.
And I don't know why that's such a great line. I think it's because there are so many apartment complexes in Southern California like that have some just beautiful name that is completely not what it is, that it was a good little piece of cultural commentary and it's delivered perfectly. And I don't, for whatever reason, that's just a line that sticks with me and I think is stuck with other people, even though it has almost nothing to do with the movie.
I got issues with Sidney Bean. I've voiced my Billy Hoyle issues.
How many jobs does he have?
He's a complete idiot.
man, he's trying to make it. He's trying to rise his, family out.
Yeah. I will say this. I do like how, like, it was the black dude who had it together and the white dude who was a mess, which in the 90s was pretty important, right? In the end, one dude was handling his business and the other dude was a complete screw up. So if I was a 17-year-old watching this, I would have been like, yeah, but I wasn't really thinking with that mind. But please explain to me why Sidney Dean had a Corvette.
Probably won in a basketball game.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, he can't get the spot. And then it was like a for sale. They buying a house. And he's talking about they want first and last. Like, not on a house.
Were they buying a house or were they renting
it? It said for sale in the yard. But if they're renting it and you could put first and last down, how about you do that instead of buying a Corvette with your earnings?
Look, it was a different time, Marcus. You needed the car to look like you had the job.
Nah, E40 said don't buy an $85,000 car before you buy a house.
This is before E40. This is probably where E40 learned it from, if we're being honest.
Yeah, he probably learned. It was just ridiculous.
How does he have all these different jobs that have nothing whatsoever to do with each other? How does a man develop so much expertise? There is something.
And how he can't come up with first and last with his place?
Yeah, like, you're helping rich people.
The Vista View apartments are, guys? Come on.
Man.
I mean, there are little pieces of cultural commentary. For instance, when the rich guy he's doing the roof for says he wants Spanish tile with the Mansour roof, and you can tell that Sidney Dean knows that's a cliche rich guy thing to do in Southern California, because if you've been to Southern California, you'll notice a lot of houses have the Spanish tile. It was just little things like that I enjoyed. It's
and then he's like, we can get you started with a $300 deposit.
Yeah, the economics of this movie are...
It was a different time, guys.
Like, you know,
inflation hadn't happened yet.
You got people, you know, almost robbing stores and then selling guns and then going back to the pickup game to gamble for the pickup game. A lot of crazy transactions going on.
You mentioned Raymond a couple of times and just said some guy. Do you know that's Marcus Johnson?
Yes.
Okay.
UCLA's Marcus Johnson.
UCLA Marcus Johnson. Point forward Marcus Johnson. Son of Josiah Johnson. Or dad
there was
of
a lot
Josiah
of NBA
Johnson.
Players in that thing.
I didn't know he was the dad of Josiah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's Josiah's dad.
I had no idea about that. Okay, that's crazy. Yeah. Wow. How dare you think I didn't know that?
That's Josiah.
Now you like the movie.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Wow.
I did not know that. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
You know who the best basketball player was, and he probably didn't make it to the NBA, or he did make it to the NBA, was Dwayne Martin.
Yeah, he could play.
Yeah.
It's Kyle Watson.
Yes,
Kyle Watson from above the rim.
Also a better basketball movie than this.
I could rewatch.
No, because the basketball is legitimately worse.
The basketball is worse, but it's so fun. It's so fun though.
The fundamentals of Nutso on a roof are impeccable.
They're incredible. But come on, in the last game, a guy throws an alley-oop to himself.
I mean, I enjoy that. I enjoy
how does that work.
I enjoy a dude playing basketball in jeans. I think that's a good.
Khakis. Khakis.
I need to rewatch Above the Rim.
Leon's footwork is far superior.
That's the other thing.
Anything we've seen
we don't have sports movies anymore. I think that's one of the reasons why we're nostalgic for this. And we don't. Not only do we not have sports movies anymore, we don't even have sports anymore. I was watching the scenes of White Men Can't Jump, and I was going, I'm like Barney Gumbel wringing out the bar rags and drinking the remaining booze in them because I have nothing now. All I have as far as basketball is concerned are who's going to win the game in the scenes I forgot from White Men Can't Jump. Now there's some action on it, and I don't know who's going to win. That's what I got, and I was enjoying
it. I tell you what I don't want to see why we don't have sports. I don't want to see severely unnecessary layups.
Yes.
What? That, man, it's a flash. You got to show out their girls at the court. What are you talking about,
this
Marcus?
This movie is full of, I'm going to 360 this wide open layup for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah, you,
like,
you,
we've never played street ball before.
Yeah, it
was, like, yeah. One mixtape never happened.
I mean, yeah, the layups are ridiculous. They're ridiculous. They're completely insane.
I feel attacked. Like, I need to speak to a manager or something. Like, this is ridiculous.
I mean, you know, but you know, though. Come on, Zach. You know.
I know what?
You know it's this is an imperfect, though,
also
lovable movie.
A staple of basketball movies, Mr. Nigel McGill, who plays Flight in this movie,
man.
Who has one of the greatest lines of trash talk ever. He's not just in this, he's in The Air Up There, he's in Blue Chips, he's in Forget Paris, he's in American History X, God. In the basketball scene. Like, he was like the go-to, we need a basketball
no
player
question.
In this movie.
Professional, right?
Yes. Yeah. And in this movie, he isolates in the tournament against Billy and says, I'm going to take you to flight school, I'm going to go to the 7th floor and drop you off on the 5th.
Yeah.
And he goes and dunks on him, and that's one of the best trash talks ever.
I mean, that was pretty good. And now you're reminding me of.
And you know what was great about it? It was an actual move that can actually happen.
Yes. Like, yeah.
Well, they all are in this movie. They all
no.
are.
Sidney Dean, 360 in every layup. It's really
funny. When he's going against Raymond and he's trying to like shake him and stuff, and you hear someone go, Tim Hardaway, my ass. Like, just great little lines here and there.
Sidney Dean just kicking the ball out like he's early career Ricky Rubio and doesn't have the finishing or shooting.
Yo, you know what he was? He was. All-Star
Rondo?
Game Magic Johnson. I watched the 1987 All-Star Game yesterday. Magic Johnson's Rajon Rondo in that thing left and right, just passing up layups for assists.
Sidney, I will say, people say Wesley Snipes couldn't play, but he kind of has the dribble look, the kind of high dribble of an Isaiah Thomas. I mean, I know that's going to sound crazy, but...
Yeah, Isaiah Thomas dribbled it with his elbow.
Well, right? Yeah, like it's like not at the speed or the coordination, but it's like that style of old school dribbling as opposed to what we see today. You're reminding me though, when you mentioned Flight, like there were a million basketball movies in the 90s and we don't have them anymore. It sucks.
Well, yeah. Cause the last time they made it was like Thunderstruck or Uncle Drew.
Well,
like,
okay.
You can't have a good basketball.
Billy
movie
Hoyle,
anymore.
Original Uncle Drew, Billy Hoyle, maybe the inspiration.
Whoa.
Yeah.
The poetic justice of this movie was how it began with Billy Hoyle and throughout maligning Sidney Dean for preferring to look good and et cetera, instead of win. When he was in his zone, he was talking the most trash.
Oh, yeah.
He basically became Sidney Dean.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, a lot of
felt proud of it.
Yeah, a lot of Billy Hoyle's projection, a lot of his criticisms. Seem to be, but I want to dwell on my insight. You know, we love Uncle Drew. You know, that caught on.
Do we?
Well, I mean, the royal we. Okay. But
idiot.
There's something
you like Uncle Drew. Things terrible.
There's something
it's a terrible campaign.
Okay, but I'm just making the point. There's something people enjoy about the hustle of somebody showing up, not looking like they can play, and whoa, grandma can dunk. You know, everybody likes that. Likes that. And it seems like maybe somebody might cite something earlier. You know, I haven't watched The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh. I don't know what happens in that movie. But, you know, was this the first?
Are you saying White Man Can't Jump was a foreshadowing to Steph Curry?
No. I'm saying a foreshadowing of, you know, PepsiCo's Kyrie Irving campaign. It's a very specific observation of the original.
Like the guy showing up, you don't think you can play. That's Steph Curry. That's his whole thing. This kid can't play, and then he's dropping 50.
A whole career off.
We love that.
You know what's sad though? At the end, it was really sad. Like when you're evaluating Billy Hoyle, right? And he lost his girl, or whatever. The worst part was he thought Sidney Dean was his friend, but Sidney Dean was not his friend.
Oh, Sidney did not. No,
it's sad.
If Sidney Dean never talked to him tomorrow, Sidney would not have remembered Billy in a week.
So sad. It's so sad. Here's another.
But he really thought he had a friend, though.
There was no reason. He got completely betrayed and felt like he owed him a favor later. It's again, there was a lot that didn't seem totally earned in this movie, but I had another thought.
He's a damaged human being, Ethan.
The PTSD and the military career they never showed. I mean, I get it. But
no, for real, this was a movie about addiction, though.
Like, yes. Another thought I had, a stray thought. What do we make of Wesley Snipes and his career? Because I can't identify why I enjoy him in so many movies.
And a whole other podcast.
He became a massive star in the 90s around this time. He was initially put on the map. I looked it up. I did some research. Major League is what put him on the map. And that's when he started getting work. And his career had a very fast build. But what was it about him in Major League? What is it about him? What is it about him that made him a huge star? And why couldn't it sustain, unlike some of the other big stars of the 1990s? I guess my initial thought is, I think he's a really good comic actor and he became an action star. And that's not perhaps the longest career that you can have. That if he had maybe stayed in the comic lane, he has more longevity. And I know he was hard to work with and everything else, and that probably played into it too.
I think there is there's an affable nature about him, right? Like he's got a good laugh. He's very lighthearted and stuff. And I think that helps bring it. And then on top of that, he's kind of a physical specimen, right? Like he's not tall, but
well, that's why he became an action star is, right. You know, in the '90s, you had to be Arnold. You had to be Stallone on steroids. You know, that was a prerequisite. I don't know what we do now. I don't know what the prerequisite anymore.
Well, like, I mean, Keanu kind of was similar, right? Mm-hmm. Like Keanu like was a comedic star or a comedic actor more or less. And then once he got into action movies, that's when he became a monster, like just in terms of earning.
Yeah. I mean,
like Blade, the Matrix and that's the thing. Blade was good enough to get a bunch of sequels, but it wasn't the Matrix.
Yeah.
It wasn't John Wick. Like,
I just don't – I wanted to identify why did he become such a big star and why didn't it last, because it is a strange arc for him. You know, other guys around that time who got as big as he did.
He wasn't type – he didn't allow himself to be typecast. I think that's why he got so big, because he was doing action movies. He was doing comedy. He was New Jack City. You know, like he was basically your go-to black guy for a while. Like whatever you needed, like he had it. So
for this movie too, Marcus, like I think it was like, oh, you can't get Denzel. We got to get Wesley. Right.
Yeah. No question. Right.
This is the second.
Like
call.
he was like the plan B for all these.
Right.
but like, I don't know what it is about him where, you know, you want to see Denzel do a serious role and be serious. I don't know if it's the same with Wesley Snipes. I don't know if we enjoy him. I don't know if that's his range for whatever reason. I think sometimes with acting, it's ineffable. You know, we can talk about it, but it's just something. It is what it is. And I couldn't even if it's my job to describe things, I can't even quite explain what he doesn't have in that capacity while being good at the other things.
Yeah, well, he kind of went to thriller movies for a little bit, or like suspense movies, right? Like Murder at 1600, U.S.
Murder
Marshals.
1600 was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. U.S. Marshals is good.
He was the fugitive.
U.S. Marshals was good.
It was good, but I can't say that he was great in it. You know, I can't say that him being the serious guy was really good.
Well, I think he made some bad decisions.
I mean, he got put away for 3 years for tax evasion, which I didn't even know could happen.
I've been accepting roles, yeah.
get three. That seems like overkill. That seems crazy. But yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Like he made some great decisions in the early to mid 90s, and then I think after that, like, I don't know, maybe it was hubris or something, but like he just thought he could turn anything into a hit, and that's not really how Hollywood works.
Or it's like, hey man, get all your money while you can, knowing it's it's a limited time.
Just nobody told him, hey, you have to give some of that to the government.
In doing my research, I saw an interview with Patton Oswalt, who was in the Blade Trinity movie, which was a disaster. And he said that Wesley Snipes lost his mind on set and was demanding that the other actors offset and off hours address him as Blade.
That's a big part of it. Sometimes these dudes just lose their mind. Like Martin used to harass Tisha Campbell like crazy.
You know, so like going crazy in the street. Sometimes they do actually go crazy.
Well, there's the behind the scenes of Hard to Work With. You'll never know about it, or you'll hear about it later on. But that probably determines a lot of casting. But I enjoyed him. I enjoyed him in Major League. I just think he was they're gifted comedic actors and actresses. He's and
phenomenal in Demolition Man, right? Yes,
so good.
Like Sly's obviously the star of that movie. Or the build star of that movie, but he makes that movie.
Yes. Yes. Completely agree.
Yeah, he's got some hits, man. He's got some hits.
Passenger 57.
He's got some hits.
You know, maybe with him it was that he was a really funny actor, but he wasn't, unlike a lot of the black actors who were in comedies of that era, he wasn't a stand-up. He didn't come from that world or have the sort of background of Eddie Murphy. And so maybe that's one of the reasons why that didn't get used as much. It's weird that he didn't do more romantic comedies. You would have thought he would have been in more romantic comedies. I feel like I'm turning into Bill Simmons as this conversation is going longer.
I don't like where this is going.
Another thing we don't have anymore is rom-coms, basketball movies and rom-coms. And that is why they'll never make another Forget Paris. In conclusion.
Angel Miguel's in that.
Okay.
So what's your favorite scene in this movie?
Oh, that's a great question. The most memorable scene, for whatever reason, is the pulling the money out of everywhere, just because of when I saw it, and I'd never seen something like that, and it threw me for a loop. But I'm trying to think, what is my favorite scene? Man, Marcus, do you have one? Do you have a favorite scene?
I'm trying to think of it.
It's funny because I asked you this before the pod and I didn't come up with one myself.
I do like from a cinematography standpoint, I really liked how when they had a shootout and it's 4-4 at the end and they switched the shot to the from the backboard.
Yeah.
And you could like see him miserable. I don't know why that was really refreshing to see that change. I was like, oh, that's dope. I don't know. They could get up there back then.
Right. But that's you know, the cool thing about that scene too is you guys are just shitting on Billy Hoyle left and right, but you see the full range of craziness of like emotions with Billy, right? Because he's being the sheepish dude. He's hustling. He's like kind of being, you know, oh wow, what luck I have, right? And then he starts talking shit, and then he gets mad. Like he can't control his emotions. Like he's going through this whole thing. Cause at a certain point he tells Sydney, he goes, shut the fuck up. He's like, he's like, rabbit ears. Am I getting to you? He goes, yeah, I'm getting to me. You're just making my eardrums hurt. Right. Like he like kind of has an explosion. Then he starts talking trash. He like brings it back into control, but he loses control in that moment.
I kind of think my favorite scene might be Raymond saying, all you motherfuckers are crazy. I'm getting my gun and I'm shooting at all of you.
Yeah. I'm gonna go to my car. Get by the gun. Shooting everybody.
Both you motherfuckers are crazy. I'm going to my car, get my other gun, shoot everybody's ass.
Raymond!
It's so funny to me. I mean, because it's the idea of you guys are all crazy. It seems like he's giving up on the situation, and that's why I'm going to murder all of you.
Yeah, he's like, I'm done trying to figure out who's hustling who. Everyone's dead.
I'm just saying though, like he said, I'm going to get my other gun. How much was that gun worth? Because it felt like if he sold both of them, he could have came up with the 500.
You would think, but you can't leave yourself gunless if you only had two guns, right?
Yeah, I mean, really.
I think my favorite scene has to just be the tournament, like when they finally play, especially when they play the, you know,
Flight Willie.
The build up to that and that kind of climax. It was great. The worst scene to me was I don't know. I just watched this movie and I was like, this was trash. But he puts up 2,500 to go dunk on
it's absurd.
At least stop at a real park.
It's absurd.
At least stop at a real park.
Why is it absurd? Like,
there's a court right here.
He can't control himself.
Yeah,
he has an addiction.
I think it's messed up that Sidney Dean even takes the bet. I know that it's
smoky. That's why he's not his friend. That's why he's not.
I know it's smoky. You get smoked, but like at that point, it's just like no, we're going home. We can both go home happy.
They'd only known each other for like a week and a half at that point.
Also, by the way, it's insane that he takes the bet, but it's also insane that he makes the bet. Like, what if he dunks and you just lose all your money?
He's a white guy. He knew he couldn't dunk.
He was applying race science.
Yeah.
You're like, I know this isn't a Pat Connaughton white.
He's like, I've seen this dude. He can't jump.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it almost felt like, too, like watching it again, that he was setting him up for this moment. Like, they're in the game, and he's like, why you didn't dunk that? Sidney Dean didn't dunk at all, either, by the way. He chose a 360 layup uncontested.
He dunked once. He dunked against Raymond. Come on, guys.
He's always in a crouch. Sidney Dean is always in a crouch.
Oh, yeah, man. You got to fire those quads up. That's how you do it. That's how you get quads
Raymond.
Like that.
When was it dunk against Raymond? Refresh my memory. Was it the game point?
No, it wasn't game point. It was in that game, though. But yeah, he came down, he dunked against, he did a two-handed dunk and pulled himself up on the rim.
You know what the least realistic aspect of this movie now, I think about it, is? It's this idea that showing up as a white guy to play pickup basketball, you know, like, okay, people are going to underestimate you. That's somewhat realistic. They exaggerate it in this movie. Sure, it's a movie. But what ends up happening if you're white and you do anything on the basketball court is – you'll hear some white NBA player get brought up or yelled out, and that never happens in this movie. And I would say that's a flaw. I mean, that, you know,
that's
somebody
not
should.
The most unrealistic thing. No, the most unrealistic thing.
Yeah.
Is Billy Hoyle coming, and they realize it's a hustle, and he got played, and he's allowed to leave the park. Like that's
that's the most unrealistic thing. Yeah, he would.
If he came to the park and he got hustled, and they, at some point you realize, oh, this was a scam, he's getting knocked out and robbed. Like, that's just like, this is not. I've literally seen it happen. There's no way. Maybe once, maybe twice. It's not happening with regular. You know, like it's not. It's not going to be a common occurrence. He's going to get knocked out.
I guess we say the least realistic. We might be here a while. I mean, the Rosie Perez just getting on the lot of the NBC studios.
He made the hook shot. Shout out to the Sudan. Shout out to Amin Al-Hassan. Like what?
By the way, what a weak favor from Sidney Dean. Like, hey, I'll get you in a situation where you'll lose your car if you don't make an impossible shot. But if you make the impossible shot, your girl gets to get on the NBC studio lot. Like that's
they were trying to hustle him again, man. Like they saw a weak link. They went to attack it.
And every time every time Billy was cool, they would like raise the stakes. Like, all right, you got his shot. Okay. No, not from right there, over there. Okay. And a hook shot. Okay. Like,
you know, hook shot.
He's a clown all the time. Like, the whole way. It's like, come on, man. Like,
yeah. They didn't respect him.
No, they did not.
No.
He never earned their respect, which, you know, I think often. Like a white guy playing basketball well, like the professor gets a lot of respect. I mean, I think that's one of the magical things about being a white person. And Zach, you can speak to this, is being underestimated and you do something good and you're lavished with praise. But it went the other way in this movie.
Well, yeah. Well, because he talked too much shit.
That was it.
And he was hustling. And he was hustling. This wasn't just basketball, right? He was hustling.
Yeah, he was hustling. Yeah. That's the thing. If he would have came and said, yo, I can play, let's go. They would have been like, all right.
But yeah,
you know, I can't play. I'm dopey. I'm over here doing calisthenics and stretching. And, oh, yeah, now I can shoot. By the way, all he could do really was shoot.
Oh, he was a great passer.
Like, they should have known that. No, he was a great passer. He wasn't.
Yeah, he was like a coach on the floor.
But it's like, okay, you surprised that the white dude can shoot.
He had a high basketball IQ. Didn't translate to gambling, but high basketball IQ. You know, the thing about him, too, he really cared about winning and not looking good doing it. He really prioritized winning over.
He did, man. That guy's a winner, unless he was gambling. But he wasn't a winner.
No. He'd lose his entire life.
I would say the only unrealistic moment of that movie, and there's just one, is when they pick him for the game at Watts coming off the train, because he's still. But now, obviously, they were setting him up.
That's not realistic because they were hustling. Yeah.
They were hustling.
You know what this movie was?
You have to wait until he gets closer. Yeah. Like, that was too
bad. Sidney Dean, he knows all.
Okay,
right?
Then I take it back. Everything's realistic in that movie.
Here's the thing.
Sidney Dean, he knows all. He knows exactly the inch level that Billy Hoyle can get up to when doing a dunk, and he just knows the exact vision of the people on the court. You know, we're talking 2020, we're talking 2015. When are they going to spy him a few hundred yards away coming off the train? He's got all of that. He's aware of all of it, and he takes it into account. You know, I think that's permissible right there. I also think, though, with the exaggeration, there's a little bit of an exaggeration of how goofy he looks. It reminds me of teen movies where, like in She's All That, they'll put some glasses on a beautiful woman, and you're just supposed to go like, oh my God, you know, hey, I can make anyone the prom queen. What about her? And it's a just beautiful actress wearing glasses, and everybody's going, oh my God, she's disgusting. It felt a little bit like that with Billy Hoyle.
He didn't look like a
white Urkel, you know?
This slander is unreal. He explains that too. It's hard goddamn work making something that pretty look so goofy.
Like, I don't think he looks that goofy.
He explained it. He did.
Come on. He looked like a homeless dude out there.
But the problem is Woody Harrelson's cool. That's the problem. They can try to dress it up however it is, but Woody Harrelson is unintentionally just accidentally cool.
They're supposed to get Willem Dafoe for that movie? Like, what are they going to do? Like, you got to get Woody.
Okay, well, look, you're captivated. Right, so you're captivated by Woody Harrelson because he's cool, but they're treating him like he's Jesse Eisenberg.
Someone else that was up for the movie, David Duchovny. Is it more believable if it's David Duchovny? He can actually play too. Well, for an actor.
Yeah, he would play in the Gary Shandling game, I remember.
Yeah.
Gary Shandling. Imagine if Gary Shandling was Billy Hoyle.
Gary Shandling in this
movie. That would be great. I want to watch that movie.
Sure. Well, tough to do now.
So David Duchovny. So Zach, I didn't see who was up for the role of Hoyle.
I know Halle Berry was up for Sidney Dean's wife.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Maybe it was too small of a part. I'm glad.
I think Farrell did. I think she did a good job. I think Farrell
was great. She's good. Yeah, she was great. Yeah, Doughboy's mama was excellent.
So I'm thinking. Okay, so Duchovny would have been able to pull off Goofy a little bit better, but he's also a little bit effortlessly cool. I think part of the problem here is to get a lead, to sell the movie. You're typically going to have to get a cool leading man. And now we're in a new era where nerds have won a lot of the culture wars. Now I think if you were making the movie today, you could get somebody who could straddle the line between.
You think Woody Harrelson is that cool?
I think he's pretty cool.
David Duchovny cool?
But I was going to make my reference. You could straddle the line between goofy and cool, like Rosie Perez straddling Woody Harrelson in a speeding car, which was also an insane, unrealistic decision.
I mean, look.
Unrealistic for him to go with it or for her to do it?
It's just crazy. Like, they're just driving. You can't see. He's like, who does that?
Look, when you're in the mood, you're in the mood. I don't know what to tell you. Ah. So you got a kid, you know.
Apparently, I was doing my pregame research, and apparently she, like, there was pushback on her doing the role. They wanted a white woman to do it, and Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes like spoke up for her, and she ended up getting the role, but they weren't sure about having a Puerto Rican woman in this movie. So I thought that was pretty
because
interesting.
It's LA. Was that why?
I don't know, because you know, you just want the love interest of the white guys to be white.
Especially at that time.
That's how it goes.
I think I was underselling her. I think that she's a huge component of what makes the movie, on balance, despite the objections, a good movie overall. I'm thinking, I'm not wrong thinking Woody Harrelson's cool. Woody Harrelson's cool. I'm not crazy, right? I mean,
we might be in a True America situation.
Keanu Reeves cool, right? He's not like David Duchovny cool. Like, he's kind of goofy.
He's wise ass Bruce Willis cool, is what he is.
Imagine Bruce Willis in this movie.
I could see that. He's similar. I could see that.
I don't know. Woody. I mean, his name is Woody, so he can pass for goofy. Like, he's got the goofy look. He can do it. Like, he can also be
he's got the accent a little bit, right? Like,
but they're treating him like he's Michael Cera, is what I'm saying.
But you have to have the fine line of someone who can be a little dopey would still be good enough to play this character, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that, like, that, that's, like, the, that's the tricky part.
And all that, right? Like, you believe him when he's, like, talking trash and talking crazy and kind of reckless.
Yeah, that that scene of the tournament when he's talking trash, he's yelling, "I'm in a fucking zone, I'm in a zone," and everything, and he's just talking mad trash. Like, that's my favorite scene because, like, he's like, that's just.
The, but what's the zone, Zach? What is the zone?
What is the zone? It's when he gets you out of your game.
It's when you hear Jimmy.
In the zone as a trash talker.
No, he's in.
From a basketball perspective, we think zone. He's hitting shots. He's like, "I'm in the zone. I'm acting just like you, Sydney. I'm in the zone."
So this is it. This is the zone, right? It's because he believes he's so good because he's so good that the zone – he's not worried about, "Oh, I'm in the zone of hitting shots." He knows he's going to hit shots because he's that good. The zone is, can I get you out of your game? And once he gets you, once he gets in Flight and Willie's head, he's in the zone and they're out of it. And that's when he knows he's got him. Same with Sydney. So the zone is him being in your head. That whole terrible, terrible – phrase of rent free that everyone throws around that just doesn't make any sense. Why you would pay rent to be in someone's head doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
it's just like the logistics of it alone don't make any sense to me. You're like, "Oh, rent free right now." I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, that doesn't mean
taking anything. A shower in your head,
right? Exactly.
Throw
yeah.
my feet up on the coffee table.
I just
table
got a new ottoman in your head. Like, no, that doesn't make any sense. Like, the whole rent free thing is stupid. But the zone is in their headspace, and so once they're worrying about what he's saying, you're toast.
See, I was thinking the zone was him getting to a place where he can be just like everybody else who plays street ball. And he doesn't have to be the Louisiana kind of cornball hickey dude where he's like, "Yo, I'm out here. I'm talking trash. Like, I'm one of y'all. I'm like everybody else out here. I'm getting buckets. I'm talking crazy. I'm on the edge." Like, and, you know, he finally reached the pinnacle where he could do that. That I wasn't sure, though. That's just what I got from it. But I hear what you're saying. Like, it makes a lot of sense.
Here's a question, because he got game, which we might, depending on the reaction to this, maybe we'll do a similar treatment. They got a real basketball player for He Got Game and Ray Allen. Is there a white basketball player who would have been right for the Hoyle role and the movie might have worked? You know, is
Rex Chapman.
I was thinking Steve Kerr.
I think, well, Ethan's pandering Steve Kerr aside, I would say Rex Chapman.
Is it a pander?
Yeah. I think it is.
I want to know what Kerr thinks of the movie now. Now I'm very curious about this.
Text him. You got the juice.
Yeah, just call him. What
yeah,
is he
just
doing?
Call him.
He's bored right now. I'll tell you that.
He's not doing. What is he going over Obi Toppin?
Yeah, literally.
You know, film
literally
right now. Like,
you know what's funny is he literally.
And if he
is.
I'm sure he'd need a break from it.
I can't reveal.
I think Rex Chapman's a great call. I think Rex Chapman's a great call.
That's a really good call. Rex Chapman's a really good call. I haven't seen too much of Rex Chapman on camera, though, other than the Twitter presence has really overtaken everything with Rex Chapman. So
people forget Rex Chapman was a beast when he played. Like,
yeah,
people don't know that. He was nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, this era, again, they had a lot of that era had a lot of white guys where maybe they weren't on the all NBA team, but maybe they missed their era. I mean, you know who would have been perfect for all the throwing layups, no look, for no reason would have been Jeff Hornacek. That was kind of his thing. He had a lot of crazy circus shots. Maybe he would have been right for it. Although I have no idea.
He would have been good.
If he has
so there was talk of White Man Can't Jump 2 and it never happened. But if they were to remake this movie, which I'm sure, Zach, even you would say is a bad idea.
Oh, terrible.
How would you recast it?
Oh, I think you would need the actual basketball players just to get a requisite level of interest.
Who are you getting playing Sidney Dean?
In the NBA.
Actual basketball players?
In the NBA. Because
I don't know anybody. I don't think you have to get actual
I think
basketball
I think you do.
You know what they would do. You know what they would do? They'd put Michael B. Jordan in there.
Yeah.
And it would just be terrible. It would be terrible. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Would it be terrible? But who would you put in there?
He's a terrible actor.
Whoa.
Who would you put in there?
Whoa, that's a take.
No, you know, I actually think you're wrong. I think they get Chadwick Boseman.
Oh, God.
I mean, he's already played Jackie Robinson.
That's true.
I'm trying to look up, is Chadwick Boseman British? I'm trying to No, he's from America. Question. He's from America. Okay. Good to know. He's from South Carolina.
You know who I would want? I just popped in my head. You know who I would want? I don't know if I'd want him, but he popped in my head. The dude from Finding Forrester.
Oh, Rob Brown.
I want him to play Sidney Dean.
That's one of my favorite movies ever, Finding Forrester.
Another basketball movie.
So much better basketball movie than this.
All right, hold on. For all your he got game so great. Ray Allen can't act for shit. What are we doing here? The main actor of the movie can't act.
Yeah, but Rick Fox is fantastic.
Rick Fox is fantastic.
Denzel is fantastic. Mila Jovovich is fantastic. But Rick Fox or Ray Allen can't act. Lala's great. Dario no, all incredible. The actors in the movie are fantastic, but the lead actor can't act.
Ray Allen was good for
he's reading cue
actors.
Cards.
If you're going to attack He Got Game, you should just be attacking all the aimless jazz between scenes.
But here's the thing. Marcus, I'm a good basketball player for media guys. That doesn't mean I'm a good basketball player. So Ray Allen can act for an NBA player.
Oh, but this is the question I wanted.
But if we put you on a team with NBA players, it won't hurt as much.
Zach, when you're playing
a good basketball player,
when you're playing pickup and it's going well, what's the white guy name people call out? That's something that's a question on my mind.
Well, so it's dependent on the era, right? So for a long time, it was J. Will.
Yeah.
It was white chalk. And then as it became more of a three-point line game for me, and less athleticism, it became Jimmer because of all the deep shooting.
I get Ginobili, and I think that's just more, I don't know, dark hair.
Ginobili.
It's just dark hair and like slightly, not totally similar features. There just isn't a lot to choose from.
I don't know
why
they call you Ginobili. You don't pass.
I don't think I've ever seen him. You know what? I think I've told this story before. I don't know if I've told on this podcast, but the first time I ever met Ethan was at the Sloan Analytics Conference basketball run.
Oh, so out of shape.
And so I knew who Ethan was because we had interacted a lot online. But every time he got the ball, I was just screaming Monte Ellis at him, trying to get him out of it, trying to get in the zone.
Trying to get in the zone because I wasn't passing. I can pass. It's more of a choice.
I'm a great passer. I just choose not to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I hate just your body breaks down. I mean, I think we'll end on this because Marcus before the quarantine was playing a little pickup, and it's just it goes away. That's the other nostalgic thing. Is I'm so much worse than I was before. Not that I was any great shape.
And my Achilles hurting now.
Oh yeah. Yeah, my shot is broken. I used to be able to finish at the rim. Now, you know, that's where you really see it is when those layups start lipping out. I'm not doing any Sidney Dean 360s anymore. I can tell you that.
That's the problem. You've taken the wrong layups.
Should be all 360 reverse layups. You think that would help recapture it? I don't even think if I went to Mosswood right now, I don't think I would get any white NBA players called out or called up. I don't think it would even happen for me. So it's, you know, we're nostalgic. Ooh. We're nostalgic for the past.
What about this for the player, the early 90s player to get the role? Scott Brooks.
Scott Brooks. Nice.
He's a little kind of deadpan and boring. And
sure. Yeah.
You know, it's I think
Steve Kerr's too tall.
You need somebody now, though. I want to know who you if you were remaking it, who would you put in now?
Well, again, Pat Connaughton. NBA player.
Yeah, it would have to be Pat Connaughton.
Pat Connaughton would be a great call for Billy.
6 years ago, we would have said Chase Budinger.
Yeah. San Diego's own.
Now, 6 years ago, we would have said Parsons.
Chase Budinger. I mean, if you think Steve Kerr's too big, you can't have Chase Budinger in there. I mean,
I think Chandler Parsons could go talk trash with them.
I'm just trying to think of white guys who have done dunk contests.
Chandler Parsons is too cool.
Can't jump thing. Chandler Parsons is too
cool.
For the white actor to remake it today, it's got to be Zac Efron.
I don't know.
He's been in a couple of basketball movies or movies that have basketball in it. He's okay.
That's not basketball.
He's a charming guy.
Justin
17 again?
Justin Timberlake?
No, JT can't play. Bieber. And we scored on Kenny Smith once.
Oh, Bieber. That is an inspired choice.
No, I've seen him. I've seen him shoot a basketball. It can't be Bieber.
But don't you like the idea of Bieber playing somebody a little down and out? I kind of like that. I like that idea. So from the actor, from the actor selection.
Who plays Rosie Perez?
Ooh.
Character.
I don't know enough about what actresses and actors are even
Michelle
out there.
Michelle Rodriguez?
Right. See it? I'm trying to...
She's great in the Fast and Furious franchise.
Yeah.
She's a little hard, though.
We don't have... thing is, we don't have mid-budget movies anymore. You know, we've lost rom-coms. We've lost movies like this. We don't have the same types of people to cast in things because they're not making movies like that. Every movie is big comic book kind of movie or Oscar bait. Yeah. We don't have the in-between.
Can you imagine Billy Hoyle spitting water in Michelle Rodriguez's face? Like he could be like, shut up, spit out that gum. She's like, what? Put two straps to his forehead. She is not blowing air. He would die. There's no question about it.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I can't tell if this is one of our best podcasts or incomprehensible to the younger listeners.
Infuriated this whole time.
You've been so infuriated. Well,
you guys are just crapping on the greatest basketball movie of all time.
I think I think people are going to be on your side. I'm just giving my honest take. I thoroughly enjoyed the rewatch. I found out.
It's enjoyable. I don't think it was like I'm exaggerating the trash part to mess with Zach, but I just remember it being better. And maybe that's the take when you watch old movies from back in the day. I just remember it being better. And like looking at it as a grown man now, looking through the lines of this stuff, I was just like, come on, man. And you know, I just want better basketball. I don't want 360 layups. I don't want that, Zach. I'm sorry. If you got an open layup, take the open layup. You don't have to like stop, stare at the guy, and then do a 360 layup. But I will say this. Some of the great lines you can use in basketball have come from this movie. That's true. Lines are incredible. Like, you can use these at all the time.
We didn't even mention we're going Sizzler.
Yeah.
Like, right? We go
Sizzler's stock went through the roof.
Yeah.
After this movie came out.
My favorite thing was we playing was, you know, remember when Wesley had he got him in a post and he throws it from his right to his left behind the defender's back. And Billy Hole's in the background screaming, "Watch the move! That's the move!
Don't let him do the move on you!
That's the move!" Man, I've said that so many times. That's the move. It's plenty of lines like that. So pretty,
yeah.
Like, you know, so pretty. All that stuff. Like,
I still don't know why it was so much
basketball dialogue.
I still don't know why it was so much hard damn work. I don't know what was so. I didn't understand what Sidney Dean was doing there with his catchphrase.
He's got like 9 jobs. You got to stay good at basketball. You got 9 jobs. Like, it's tough, man. It's hard goddamn work.
It's hard goddamn work.
it was great to look at your teammate that you playing with and just be like, yeah, that's too easy. Like,
too easy. I don't want to play anymore. I'm done.
I don't know why I love that so much. That exchange I love where they're one upping each other by saying the same thing, and somehow it's great.
And pausing before. No. Too easy. Right? You know who was awful? Come on, Zach, you got to give me this. You know who was bad watching it again? Kadeem Hardison.
Oh, he's terrible. Bad in just about everything, if we want to be honest about this.
I don't know why I remember him being funny.
Oh, like, man.
It wasn't funny at all. Yeah, it was bad. Yeah, it was.
I'm just looking up what the last thing
was.
It wasn't
that bad. We're killing it, but, you know, we're trying to be Roger Ebert. It was just a few parts.
I think he was okay. You know, he was
terrible.
He wasn't really adding, wasn't really taken away. I don't know. Who do you want in that role?
He was like a bad Marlon Wayans. I would want Marlon Wayans in that role.
Yeah, I love Marlon Wayans, though. I think Marlon Wayans is underrated. Underrated Marlon Wayans.
He would have been too – well, oddly enough, they made a horrible basketball movie together called The Six Man.
Was he playing basketball in Senseless or whatever that was called too? I'm trying to – he was playing hockey. He was a hockey goalie.
Marlon Wayans is in Above the Rim as well.
Yeah, he did a better version of that role in Above the Rim.
Yep, 100%. And I also think he was too big at the time, but – Martin Lawrence probably would have been perfect for that role.
Marlon Wayans,
yes,
is really good, and I think because he's so goofy, maybe didn't get taken seriously enough, even though he was in Requiem for a Dream. But yeah, he would have been.
Remember, Martin was that role in Boomerang, like the side dude who was
kind of
funny.
A little
like
bit, and do the Right Thing too. Now that I think about it, but he might have been too big by then to have a role like that. I mean, he was. When was peak Martin? Okay, now we're getting into a whole other thing. Okay, so
By the way, I want to make a confession. You were talking about the white guys. I was the guy in my hood shouting out a white guy.
Of course, and
I was yelling the white guy, not to the white guy, but as myself. And they used to always laugh because when I was growing up, the Warriors was big time, right? And I wasn't that good. The one thing I could do was shoot, and I would amp up my game because I could shoot with my left hand. So I would literally shoot with my left hand while we were playing pickup, especially in transition from the left side. And I would scream mullet, and they would be like, "Dude, what?" And I'm like, "I'm Chris Mullet now." So I'm pulling up. I was the only dude in the hood shouting out a white dude.
Hey man, he was first team All NBA in that 91-92 season. So you know that was a pretty. I mean that is the ultimate.
Mullet was incredible.
Yeah, well, that's the ultimate is making Charles Barkley's list of that's a bad white boy. And I think Mullen, I mean, Barkley wasn't in media then, he was playing, but I think he probably would have made the list. And I think the list includes Steve Nash, Dirk, Luka right now, and maybe that's
Larry Bird.
I mean, obviously.
I've got one bone to pick with you. You said no one's stopping and doing these 360 lifts and staring at the defender and everything. And that's just not true.
You're shooting left-handed.
That's not true. First time I ever played Tony Jones.
Mark is shooting left-handed, changing his race, and he thinks it's crazy to take a 360 layup.
You know what I'm saying?
First time I ever played against Tony Jones, it was point game. And it was a 2-on-1 fast break, and Tony was the only one back defensively because he didn't hustle up the floor for some reason. And so he was the only one back defensively, and I caught the ball on the wing, and he's in the middle of the floor, and I stood there, and I gave him the finger of come here, get closer. And then as he started to take a step, I shot the three and hit it and won the game. So people do that, Marcus. That's real life.
Here's the question. Would you have done it if you didn't watch White Man Can't Jump?
Here's the other question.
I think this shaped my whole persona in life.
Here's the other question, and this is impressive from Zach's end because there's so much going on in this movie. We've got a white player, he can't dunk, white man can't jump. Zach has such security and such a lack of arrogance that he's not telling the podcast listeners that for at least a long time, as far as I know, you could dunk. Is this correct?
There was 3 years I could dunk. I wouldn't say a long time. I would say from 19 to 22 I could dunk.
I feel like if that was me, it would have been brought up multiple times.
You know why? Because Zach loves himself.
That's what it is?
Zach doesn't need to try to be somebody else. He doesn't need to try to curry favor by telling people he can dunk. Right? Matter of fact, dunking isn't even that important. You know what Zach can do? Zach can go be himself.
And
security
shoot.
There.
And shoot. I mean, as well. I mean, that's really
the only thing I can do now. All right, I feel bad. Ethan's tried to wrap this podcast up 9 times.
We're having fun. It's hard. It's hard to wrap it up.
Well, why you keep trying to wrap it up then?
Yeah, we're having fun.
I don't know. I think it's just
where do
because
you have to be? We're all locked down.
Asher about to get on his neck.
Asher's taking his nap right now, and it's just countdown. I recorded another podcast with Marcus where Asher was up and he was jumping on me and he was shouting basketball into the microphone. So I'm just counting down. I think that's the anxiety. That's the sweat that is building right now on the back of my neck, is just knowing that the energy of the toddler is going to be coming at me full force. But I really had fun, guys. This is great. I think we should do it again. And I want to give a thank you to, I don't know who's producing this. Jade started producing it, and then we had a new producer on it. But whoever's producing it, I want to give a big thank you to them. Big thank you to the listeners. We're going to be creating content, doing the best we can, even though it's a crazy time in the year with sports being canceled. It also allows us to try some things that we wouldn't ordinarily try, and hopefully you get something good out of that. So big thank you to Zach. Big thank you to Marcus. Big thank you to all of you. Stay safe out there. Distance appropriately. Try to focus on the good things you have. See ya.